Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
John Canzano.
He's good. He's good. He says his opinion and it's usually right on, I think.
Love him.
That guy's awesome, man. Absolutely love him.
He's dead sexy.
Best radio journalist there is around. Tells it like it is. And he's just right on point. He's sharp, man. Love John Canzano.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
Hate him.
Not a big fan.
Hate him. Too opinionated.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. Most of his opinions I don't really agree with.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
Love to hate him.
Sometimes I think he's all right, and sometimes I think he's a lousy writer.
I'll read his column, but I am not a fan of John Canzano.
Bald-faced truth teller.
I really don't like John Canzano.
Who is he to judge?
I like that he's controversial, I guess.
Pretty good. He's not afraid to call people on their crap.
You love him or you hate him.
It's a love-hate relationship.
I love John Canzano. He's a cool dude.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
Well, the Blazers have lost four straight, and including last night, a game in which they didn't play that smart at the end of the game, and it's arguable that they played hard. I do think they played hard in the second half. But you tell me, as you look at that cast against maybe the Oregon Ducks season, no defense at all, very disappointing season. The coach gets fired. Which of those two things is more disappointing, really? Is it the Blazers' start this year as they get off to, in their first 26 games, a 12-14 record? Last year, they were 11-15 through 26. What's more disappointing, Oregon's football season or the Blazers' basketball season? If you're both a Duck and a Blazer fan, you tell me which of those, to you, is more disappointing. And if you're an outsider looking in, tell me which of those sides should be more disappointed with how things went. I think the Blazers can be fixed, but that's going to require movement by general manager Neil Olshey. We'll talk about that on today's show. We've got great guests. We're going to dive deep on a couple of social issues as well. But you tell me at 417-7575, where should the disappointment lie when it comes to the sports landscape in this state and what was a very disappointing 4-8 football season? And you've got a Blazers basketball season in which, you know, they're not playing any defense either. Phone lines are open at 417-7575. Now, in the summer, we saw the spending spree that the Blazers went on. $40 million over four seasons for Mo Harkless. Damian Lillard got that max contract. C.J. McCollum got a maximum extension. They re-signed Alan Crabb at $75 million. Myers Leonard got $41 million. Evan Turner, $70 million. Festus Ezeli, $16 million. Great depth, right? But also, and more importantly, a lot of options for Neil Olshey at the February trade deadline. Also, next summer. Now, the Harkless signing was interesting to me because when the Blazers made that move at the end of sort of the free agent signing period, at the end of everything, what I saw was the Blazers' potential to end up holding a significant luxury tax bill. And I thought to myself, no way in hell is Paul Allen going to pay a luxury tax bill unless they're winning a championship or competing for a championship. No way in hell is he going to be happy starting a season 12-14 and paying a $20 million tax bill. So the bigger issue for me as I look at this roster isn't, well, how are the Blazers going to do this? It's rather a different question. It's the wrong question. The question is, whose jersey is it safe to buy for your kid besides Damian Lillard? Because this roster needs moves. C.J. McCollum potentially on the trade block. Myers Leonard, Alan Crabb, Evan Turner. I haven't really met Festus Ezeli yet in any significant way, so I don't know who he is. Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu. When you look at this roster, who's going to be here and what moves have to be made? And I watched last night's game. I watched how that went down, and I said, they've got one star player in Lillard. They've got one nice player in C.J. McCollum. They've got a lot of potential rotation players after that. And by the way, those guys don't fit together. And everybody was making a big deal about Evan Turner. You know, he had a finger pointed at him by DeAndre Jordan, and Evan Turner wouldn't stand for it. And it just kind of falls hollow to me, and it falls flat to me, because I don't want you to pretend that you're a tough guy. I want you to be a tough guy. And it's like the recruit for the Oregon Ducks said on yesterday's show. He said, you know, he's looking around, looking at how he fits at Oregon, and, you know, he kind of sees himself as a dog.
Players already telling me that I'm a dog, they're a dog. Program need a dog to win, so they with it too. After this dead period, you can look and see a lot of commitments come from Florida area.
The real deal McNeil, that's Darian McNeil, who came on yesterday's show, Oregon Ducks recruits commitment, and a guy who's going to arrive early on campus in Eugene. And by the way, we had Darian McNeil on yesterday, and here is a three-star recruit out of the state of Florida that I think has been as heralded as any player that we have seen come to Oregon, for the simple fact that he is different than players who have come to Oregon in the past. He has not seen the locker room. He has not worn a jersey. He has not been wowed and wooed by Nike's influence on Oregon. He simply wants to come play for Willie Taggart, and he's getting away from home to do it, and he is committed to the University of Oregon without even seeing the campus. And by the way, he's a dog. And we need dogs. We need dogs on this show. That's why we have Kiki here. It's why we have Kellen here. It's why we have Gliss here. It's why we have Dustin here. We need dogs on this show. Because dogs will battle. Do the Blazers need more dogs? And if so, which of the dogs, D-O-G-S, would you be willing to part ways with in a trade? 417-7575. We'll kick that around the room. Gliss, you're a Blazers fan. You're Mr. Rip City Entertainment down there, DJ Gliss. Which player on this roster would you part ways with? And what's more disappointing, the Ducks or the Blazers seasons?
I think the Ducks is definitely more disappointing. Just because it's early, as you pointed out, they're ahead of the pace from last year. Yes, I think the expectations were higher. The guy I look at is C.J. McCollum, just because I think he has the most value and he's probably going to bring back the best player. The guy I don't want to get rid of is Mo Harkless.
That's the guy you don't want to part ways with. Kiki, you're a Blazer fan.
Yep.
Which players would you be willing to part ways with? And let's just put this out there. Let's say the elephant in the room is you've got DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento who's very unhappy. You got the Kings who probably will wait till February to trade him because they'll wait to get the best offer they can get. So who are you willing to part ways with to get a good player in return?
Well, I would try to bundle Alan Crabb with someone. I think we need to keep Al-Farouq Aminu for defensive purposes. I hate the notion of getting rid of CJ. I just don't like the idea of breaking up CJ and Lillard. I think they're just great in the backcourt. So who else does that leave us? Myers Leonard, Alan Crabb, someone else,
Evan Turner.
Yeah, let's get rid of that, the new guy.
The obviously the salaries will have to match on a deal with that within 25%, but you have a lot of payroll here in the Blazers roster. But if I always put myself in the shoes of the other team when the deal comes up, and the guys I want are guys that are going to give you value. And I don't see a lot of value in Alan Crabb at $18.5 million this season. Like, that's not a lot of bang for your buck.
But how can we package him? See how I say we?
Yeah.
How could we package him with someone?
I think a guy who is super attractive and probably the most attractive player on this roster is C.J. McCollum, because his salary this season is a bargain at $3.2 million. That is a great value. The problem, I think, the bill comes due for the Blazers, I think, you know, next season when he jumps up to $24 million, for what he gives you, yeah, he's a nice player. On a team that's going nowhere, he's going to pile up a lot of stats. But on a really good team, you put, like, C.J. McCollum on the Spurs or even on the Clippers, he's probably sixth man on one of those teams. Let's go out to the phones. 417-7575 is the number. John's on I-5. What's up, John?
You hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Hey, you know what? It's real simple if you look at the numbers on who you want to get rid of and who you want to keep. And I agree with you. I think Cousins would be a great fit. I think we should get rid of Aminu. He shoots 20% from three-point line. Myers is only shooting 31% this year, and Turner's only shooting 27%. Anybody that's shooting less than 33% is probably not going to work out too good. I mean, if you're looking at teams like the Houstons of the world who are kind of parroting and mimicking Golden State, and they're winning. You know, you just load your team with good three-point shooters and do the best you can with the defense. Let the chips fall where they may.
The issue, and by the way, I love the idea of taking DeMarcus Cousins and pairing him with Damian Lillard, and I think that's what you need. You need a – everybody talks, and Kiki, you're not the only one who's guilty of this. Everyone talks about McCollum and Lillard. That, to me, is not a combination that's going to get you to the Western Conference Finals. You need someone who really complements Damian's game in that you need a front court player to pair with your great guard. And I look at DeMarcus Cousins and I say, look, if you're trading anybody not named Damian Lillard, I would do that to get Cousins in return. You'd have two of the best 15 players in the league on the same team. And then you could take a better defender than CJ McCollum and put him at the shooting guard, which would really take pressure, I think, off Damian Lillard.
Well, don't you think, and I agree with what you're saying, but don't you think on some level, having both of those guys being a threat from the three-point line helps the other one? Because the defense has to play a little bit closer to McCollum, which is going to allow Damian to have a little bit more space. I mean, I just think the two of them together, and I think that's why they had so much success last year, is because the both of them were playing really great basketball.
I think that they had a lot of numbers and a lot of opportunities because the rest of the team's bad. Like, there aren't a lot of great players who need volume shots on this team. So when you look around and your choices are Evan Turner or Alan Crabb or Myers Leonard or Mo Harkless or Ed Davis or Noah Vonleh, you know, or Mason Plumlee, you know, there isn't a guy there that needs shots. So McCollum gets shots he wouldn't get if he were on a good team. I think we're blinded by emotion when it comes to this.
Well, I'm guilty of that, but I also think the game has changed. I think traditionally it was outside or, you know, down in the block and then out. Now it's anyone is shooting from the 3-point line. So I don't subscribe necessarily to the notion that you need that big guy down there. I mean, you do on some level to have rebounds. We've got Myers Leonard, Alfred Camuno, but I just don't like the idea of breaking those two guys up.
Let's go out to the phone lines. Would you do it? Would you trade CJ McCollum if you could get DeMarcus Cousins in return? And obviously you're giving up a lot more than McCollum, because if I'm the Sacramento Kings, I want CJ McCollum. I want a player like Al-Farouq Aminu. I want another player like Mo Harkless. And I want a first round pick, your first round draft pick, a future pick in exchange for that. Bob's in Portland. The number's 417-7575. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, first of all, we talked about this yesterday, John. And for Kiki's purposes, 6'3 shooting guards come a dime a dozen. There's not going to be a problem filling that. And DeMarcus Cousins, he's not just a guy down low. This is a once-in-a-lifetime guy that can play. He's shooting the three now. So he's a guy you get. You just worry about his temperament, but they take him to the next level. And to answer your question about who's more disappointing, it's definitely the Ducks. I mean, we know when the NBA season starts, it's going to be San Antonio, Golden State, Cleveland, and that's it. That's, you know, Portland had no chance. The Ducks, they've been to the mountain. They can always have a chance in college football. That's what makes it exciting. One last thing. The only dogs that the Oregon Ducks would want would be Chris Peterson. Otherwise, don't say that we need more dogs.
I wondered when he came on the show yesterday if he understood the ramifications of dog in sharing that. 417-7575. DeMarcus Cousins is 26 years old. And, you know, he doesn't have options around him in Sacramento. If the Kings continue on this road, he's going to be that player who, when his contract matures and he has an opportunity to leave, that he ditches them and leaves them. So I think this is it. February, at the latest in the summer, 2018, he becomes, a free agent, and then you got a problem. But I look around the rest of the league, there's just not a lot. Maybe Nerlens Noel is another player in Philadelphia who has some trade buzz and trade value to him. There's a huge drop-off to me when you talk about top 15 players and the ability. If I told you in the draft you could go out and get a top 15 player to put with Damian Lillard, you'd be like, yes, We'll take that draft pick. We'll tank it this season. We'd love to do it. And now I'm saying, if you could part ways with C.J. McCollum, who, by the way, you don't have a whole lot invested in, and you part ways with him, suddenly you've got a top 15 player to put with Lillard. I know it's emotional. I know your kid might not have that jersey, and you know might have to get rid of that jersey. I know I had to do it with my kid. She had a Nick Batum jersey. She had a Gerald Wallace jersey. She had, I don't know who else. Like, when players get traded, it messes with people, and the kids have to give away their jersey. Do you have a jersey?
No. Wallace, though?
She had Gerald Wallace. I can see his hair.
I can see Batum. She liked Wallace.
She liked his hair.
You rolled the dice on that one.
She liked Batum because after one game, Batum was nice to her and said something to her, and she was like, that's my guy forever. So
well, and the accent's kind of...
The players pretty cool.
I do
that.
Not have a jersey.
Gliss, do your kids have Blazers jerseys?
They do not. They want a Damian Lillard jersey. I have lots of jerseys from like the Brandon Roy era. And as a Blazer fan, that's kind of what I'm afraid of. If you stick with CJ, you know, you think it looks great for the future, but then you're sitting here 3 years from now and you're still in the same spot. Cause I feel like they never pulled the trigger when they had Roy and Aldridge and all those guys to make the big move to really put them over the top.
You have to take a risk, I think, to be a team in this league that excels. You either have to get lucky in the draft, or you have to be a free agent destination, or you got to take a risk. And I think this is a franchise that I think should go for it at some point. And I don't think DeMarcus Cousins is a huge risk when it comes to the go for it category. John's in Portland. I do have one line open at 417-7575. John, what's up?
Yeah, he's a little bit Rasheed Wallace-like, but not as bad.
Yeah.
I think Terry Stotts is just the right guy to work with him. So I kind of agree with you. I think it's time to bring in a top-line inside player, so I totally disagree with the Kiki. In the NBA, defense is every bit as important as offense. That's why Fredette from BYU didn't make the NBA. He could shoot the lights out, but he was terrible on defense.
7 years DeMarcus Cousins has been in the NBA. He's had seven losing seasons in Sacramento. I bet he's ready for something else. And you know what I'm kind of impressed by? I'm impressed with the idea that he is currently, his current position, whether this is guided by an agent or maybe his own intuition, his current position is, I'm happy here. I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger. You can tell he wants to be traded because he said things at a different point. But his current position is, you know, hey, if I end up here, it's their thing, and maybe they build around me. But I think down deep, if you're DeMarcus Cousins, you have your bags packed, you have everything in boxes, and you're like, please, February, please, February. Jared's in Portland. Jared, what's up?
Hey, John. You're doing a pretty versatile show here with covering the Ducks and the Blazers at the same time. So I'm going to flip it back over to the Ducks real
Go
quick.
Ahead.
Talk real quick about what Taggart's doing. To me, it just is mind-boggling. And you see guys like Isaiah Bolden and some of these other guys start to say, I'm getting dream offers from, you know, Oregon, then they live out in Florida. Where was Helfrich in finding these kids, and why didn't they get an offer until now? That's what I'm just curious about.
Yeah, and I think they were recruiting different players from different regions, and I think it's a great point. A lot of people are excited about what Willie Taggart is doing, but I'm looking at what Willie Taggart's doing. I don't see any surprise here. He knows kids in Florida. He was recruiting a lot. He was on a lot of these kids trying to get them to come to South Florida, and he lost out to Arizona on the real deal McNeil. Who came on yesterday's show, Darian McNeil. And the kids that he's chasing now are guys where he's going, hey, he knows what Oregon is. He said, after he did our interview, when he was introduced last Thursday, he did an interview on this show, I asked him, you know, do you know what you have? He was going to watch film of the Ducks to see what they had. And I was not surprised that when that plane left Eugene and he went to Hawaii, and also went to Provo, Utah to talk to some defensive tackles and defensive ends. Then he got playmakers from South Florida that would come sight unseen to Eugene. Willie Taggart's not dumb. And by the way, in between that, he's showing up at halftime of the Ducks game in basketball, and he's getting on the court, and he's just brilliant with a microphone in his hands. I think part of the problem for Mark Helfrich was that the staff became very insular, ingrained, I don't want to say incestuous because that comes with baggage, but it's like the ideas, the thinking that was going on inside the program was stale thinking. They were recruiting players from the same old regions that they knew. They were losing the recruiting battles that they were trying to win with SEC schools and Big Ten schools that they were maybe a little out of their league with but didn't realize it yet. And the players they were getting weren't developing. They kept saying, we missed. Oh, we missed on that guy. Some of it is missing. Well, I'm sorry. If you're missing on guys, that's part of the job as head coach, that you're not identifying the guys that can play. I trust what Willie Taggart's doing right now, and I'm excited to see players from parts of the country that have really not been mined. Florida, for example. When we had McNeil on the show yesterday, the dialect he was using, the accent that he had was different. We've seen kids from different parts of the country on, but all of a sudden we had a kid from the South who was saying, hey, I've never seen Eugene. I don't know a damn thing about it, but I'm all in. Matt's in Portland. What's up, Matt?
I was just calling back about the Blazers.
Yeah, what do you got?
I was thinking they should trade anybody but Mo Harkless and Lillard. Like, anybody else can go. And I don't know if they can trade Crab because of the new contract, but he did not look happy he wasn't in the last 3 minutes of the game yesterday.
I was told last season that Terry Stotts was given a directive down the stretch that he had to play Allen Crabb, and he wasn't entirely thrilled about it. Gerald Henderson was the better player, especially defensively, when those guys were on the court. And Allen Crabb got the minutes because GM Neil Olshey wanted Allen Crabb on the court. And this season, I'm kind of looking around at Evan Turner playing so much last night. He had 30 minutes. And I wondered if Olshey had given Stotts another directive to play Evan Turner with the eye towards, we got to move this guy at the deadline. We need him. We need some numbers. Because I thought it was really curious that he got so many minutes off the bench. Maybe he was just playing well and playing with some intensity, but there's a guy making $16 million. He's very early in this new contract, and clearly he does not fit with where the Blazers want to go. We'll continue this discussion, more of your phone calls, plus senior NBA writer for ESPN's The Undefeated, Mark Spears. He's always great on the NBA. I'll ask him about Boogie in Portland.
Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth on 750 and 1029 The Game. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave
your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Mark Spears, NBA writer for ESPN's The Undefeated. We love having him on. He joins us now. San Jose State guy as well. What'd you think of the San Jose State hire? They get a Oregon State assistant coach as the football coach.
You tell me. Should I be excited?
I worry about that athletic department as a whole. I mean, it feels like it's just like taped together with scotch tape.
Well, the athletic director.
Yeah. Bad news, huh?
Just outdated. I mean, I think the good thing that is happening with this hire, though, is a national search that the president pushed for, from what I hear.
Yeah.
And so you got a guy that has, you know, he wanted, the athletic director wanted to bring in, this is too much information for Portland, Pat Hill, former Fresno State guy.
I like Pat Hill.
Which, that'd be like Oregon State or Oregon hiring, like, Oregon's head coach, old head coach, is their head coach.
Mike Bellotti, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see the problem.
Like, that wouldn't happen,
yeah.
Right?
No.
We can't hire Pat Hill. We still, that's our rival, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, you guys don't care.
I care. Yeah, you know why? Because Jeff Garcia called me after they hired Brennan from Oregon State, and Garcia wanted an interview. He never even got an interview. Mm. He's mad at the AD, too.
I went to college with Jeff Garcia. I actually broke the story that he was signing with, I think, the Rough Riders?
Calgary Stampeders.
Stampeders, yeah, same difference.
It's your story, though.
Calgary Stampeders, he signed a $50,000 contract. and I remember watching him in college. He was great. He just undersized. And a little surprised he didn't get drafted. But, you know, he ended up having a pretty good career.
Yep. Let's talk first about the undefeated. How is that going, and how happy are you there?
Oh, I'm ecstatic. I mean, hopefully everybody listening has had a chance to read the undefeated.com. I think it's one of the best sites at a great time, or maybe a troubling time, depending on how you look at it. I mean, we touch about race and sports, and, you know, it's a, definitely an eccentric, different site for ESPN because, you know, we have every sport you want to talk about. You know, we talk about it, but, you know, we also talk about race and culture and politics and, you know, a lot of things that affect black community, people of color. You know, it's very different, very cool, and it's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like brought back writing. Like, I actually write stories now. I don't just get the little short gratification for breaking that, you know, John Smith got a 10-day contract.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, I could actually write something that, like, to me matters and that people might read in 3 months, 3 years, 30 years, you know, just stories that have impact. And so it's you know, as a old writer, you know this stuff, just to, in today's day and age where people are so quick to turn to something different, you know, there's actually long form writing has made a comeback, and it's good to me to be able to write that.
I'm looking at the site now, and I just think it's such an interesting blend of culture and sports that I encourage people to check it out. And you're right, it's a deep dive and it's good writing, and they were smart to bring you on. Does any part of you miss the stuff you were doing at Yahoo, sort of the in the moment breaking news stuff, or are you getting fed enough with the undefeated? Like, because you're doing those deeper dives.
I was very appreciative and happy for my time at Yahoo.
Yeah. See how I'm grilling you?
I was very appreciative of what they did for me, and I certainly wish them the best, and they got a lot of great people there.
Can we talk Blazers now? Because this is a roster that's all...
Yeah, I was watching the game last night.
Yeah.
They're hard to figure to me, man.
Yep.
I don't know what to think of them.
CJ McCollum is interesting to me because I just don't see Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum as enough to really compete. If you give me DeMarcus Cousins and you rearrange that roster in any way you would like, I think they're better off for it. Am I crazy?
If I'm them, you try to add DeMarcus Cousins while leaving those two there. They need a third star. I think he'd be great there. The thing is, like, if you're Sacramento, like, do you want him in the Western Conference?
Yeah.
You know, do you want to play them four times a year? Do you want him coming into your new arena talking trash? I will say this. I've gotten to know Cuz pretty well. He's an unbelievable player, man. I still think people don't really understand how good he is. I mean, he's very emotional. I do think that a lot of his emotion has come with the fact that the Kings situation is just so unstable, so up and down. I mean, he's had like five different coaches, three different general managers. I mean, it's just two different owners. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah.
There's always a change there, and I think he needs to be somewhere where you know the ownership is big. You guys got that. You know, you got a strong general manager and you got a strong coach, and it doesn't look like there's going to be change there. He needs stability. He needs to be in a place where they have a great chance of winning every night. And, you know, I think if he went there, it would certainly vault. I wouldn't go as far as to say that Portland would be better than Golden State or better than the Spurs, but they could, you know, they'd be in the mix. you know what I mean? You could mental title contender if they got him because he's just that good, and I just think that a lot of the things that detract him, a lot of things that kind of get him in trouble would go away. I mean, he's just extremely talented, and I think a guy like Dame Lillard could kind of keep him intact, whereas they've never really had a huge veteran presence or another star other than Rondo that kind of got the best out of him or kind of held him in check, you know? think that if he was with Dame, Dame could make sure that, you know, his emotions were right and get the best out of him. Because if you watch Cousin USA Basketball, his emotions were in check there.
Yep.
You know, so it shows me that it's possible for him to just play basketball. I just think that he needs a change, and it'd probably be in his best career move for him to go somewhere else. But it has to be somewhere else where you have a star that's bigger than him, a coach that's solid, and an ownership that's solid, and a GM that's solid, and a lot of, you know, it has to be a playoff caliber, not a playoff caliber team, a playoff team. And so, yeah, I do think that Portland could offer a good landing place for him. I just don't know if the Kings want to help the Blazers.
If you are the Kings, is there motivation given his contract and, you know, the idea that I keep hearing they want to see what they're going to be at the trade deadline? They're going to be what they've always been. They're losers. I mean, it's 7 years
he's
been there.
Here's another thing. Like, I always remember your former Blazer, Kiki Vandeweghe, when he was GM of the Nuggets, saying, at some point you got to look at your team and say, okay, can we go any further with this? Is this about as far as we could go? I just don't see this. I mean, what are the Kings going to do really to get any better? They're not going to get any free agents, right?
Yep.
I mean, what are they going to trade for to make that team better? So to me, the only way I think the Kings could take a step forward is through the draft. And they've drafted awfully. Is that a word, awfully? Last couple of years, they haven't done that well. But I think if I'm them, I'm knocking on Boston's door. I want that number one pick that they got from the Nets, and I want the pick they got from the Nets next year. That's what I want.
You've got...
And you could throw me Amir Johnson to kind of, like, make the money work. Because I just think that this draft that's coming up, like next year's draft, it's going to be special. It's going to be Jordan draft special. It's going to be LeBron draft special. It's going to be special. And if they were to, like, say, tank it now, trade Cuz, get the first from Boston, and perhaps have, you know, two picks in the top six, top five, those, to me, are two young players that they could get that could change the direction of the franchise in the right direction and just change the identity, be affordable, and maybe even change it perhaps in, like, 3 years that a free agent might want to come there, you know? But I think if they don't trade Cuz, they're going to eventually lose him for nothing, and that would be extremely debilitating to the Kings.
Mark Spears, NBA senior writer from ESPN's The Undefeated, is with us. I looked at what Neil Alshay did in the summer, and I think it was really smart. He realized we're not going to sign free agents here. We've got to retain our own assets. We've got to go out and get the guys that we can get. They obviously got Evan Turner. You know, Festus Ezeli comes in. But you're right. When you watch them, the reason why they're so confusing is that they don't make any sense to you. I mean, this roster makes no sense other than we got to move some guys and we have some assets to make deals in February and next summer.
Well, I'm rooting for Festus, man. I mean, I got to know him really well. He's a fantastic guy. And when he is healthy, he will help. Trust me when I say this, he beats himself up daily for the fact that he hasn't been able to play. And it pains him that he's not able to play. He's hopeful soon, and I think that Blazers fans would really like him because, you know, he's a guy that blocked shots and rebounds and is getting better in the post. And I actually don't think he should even have played in the playoffs. I don't think he was really back yet, but with the way the Warriors were playing, I think there was probably some pressure there to come back, and you're in the finals. I mean, you're gonna play, you know. But it could have ended up being to his detriment. So I know he wants to be there, and in fact, the money that the Blazers got him for, had he been healthy, I mean, there were people thinking that he was going to get 13, 14, 15 million. So there was a reason why the Blazers got the discount they got on him. You know, it's because of his injury, and obviously he hasn't played yet, but if he could get healthy, the money that they got him for could end up being a steal.
Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City has left Russell Westbrook in a position where he's just piling up numbers. But what's Westbrook's story going to be? Where do you see this going for him?
I think they'll just be one and done in the playoffs. I mean, he'll get his numbers, and he perhaps will. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets MVP. But I just think that, Durant leaving Oklahoma City basically helped Golden State not only getting one of the best players in the world or a top three player in the league, but it just crippled one of their biggest foes. I mean, Oklahoma City was that close to knocking them off. And now it gives them one less team that they got to worry about in the postseason. I think Golden State has showed you that they don't have to worry about the Clippers. I think the only team that they got to worry about is San Antonio right now. And if they get the top seed, then San Antonio and the Clippers will probably play in the second round. And perhaps Golden State has an easier road to the Western Conference Finals this time. But that, I think, is something that isn't talked about enough, is that, Russell Westbrook is, say that five times fast,
yeah.
Russell Westbrook is killing it, but Durant just killed the Thunder by going to Golden State. I mean, it certainly changed the dynamics. I don't think Golden State has any excuse this year. If they lose, I mean, what excuse can they say other than maybe if someone gets hurt? But if they're at full strength, it'd be absolutely embarrassing to me if they don't win the championship.
If I throw, just for the sake of argument, I throw DeMarcus Cousins with Russell Westbrook, is that a more lethal combination to you than Lillard and Cousins, or is it pretty much the same thing?
I think the Portland thing would perhaps be better, because then you got, to me, you need three stars. And I think CJ would be a great third star the way Clay's a great third star. You know, like, imagine how much easier it would be for him if Cousins was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But would you be confident if Oladipo was that guy, that third guy? And I also wonder, I mean, Russ needs the ball so much, and to be successful, I don't know how well he and Cuz would coexist. At least I know that Dame would get, Cuz the ball, that Dame is used to playing with another big guy, which he was in LaMarcus. So I think they would do well together. I just think for the Kings, man, they need picks. They need high picks. I mean, what does Portland have to offer them?
Portland's got two first-round picks in this next draft. They've got their own, and then they've got the one they got from Cleveland that's top 10 protected. It won't be a top 10.
So you're talking about two picks, 15 to 30.
Yeah. And
or maybe 20 to 30.
It's why I can't see Sacramento taking anything that doesn't include C.J. McCollum, who's making only $3 million this year. He jumps up to 24 next. If I'm the Kings, I have to have C.J. I have to have those picks.
If I'm trading him, I got to get a top five pick next year. That's important to me. I got to get somebody that could potentially replace him in the draft. And those picks don't do it. I mean, I like CJ a lot, but I need somebody that could potentially be a superstar in the league. And I really believe this draft has five or six guys that could actually end up being very special.
So if you're Neil Olshey, do you try to do everything you can to get to DeMarcus Cousins? And if you can't, you're trying to get into the lottery? I mean, I bet everybody's going to be holding those lottery picks, right?
The only way if you're Boston and Sacramento offers you Cousins for your first this year, next year, the Brooklyn picks, I mean, that's something that you got to think about. I mean, and the thing is this, like, when you're the Celtics right now, you got a window. You know that Cleveland basically isn't really being challenged the way they could be. But I think if you put Cuz with Horford and Isaiah, I mean, all of a sudden they're on a different level, and you got to try. Whereas I mean, it'd be great for Boston to get one of those young guys, but I don't think they're thinking, like, develop somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sacramento could develop somebody, and, you know, it'll be okay, but I don't know that Boston really has a time right now to try to groom someone, whereas if you could, you know, elevate yourself with a superstar, with a stable ownership, stable general manager, stable coach, I think Cuz would do good there. It makes sense to me that those two engage in a trade for both sides. I just don't know that what Portland could offer is enough to make a trade of that magnitude.
Mark Spears, you can read him at The Undefeated, senior writer, ESPN. Spears, you're the best, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Happy New Year, brother. Feliz Navidad, Hanukkah, Christmas, all that.
All right. Thanks, Spears. There he is, Mark Spears. Read him at The Undefeated. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. What would you give up to get DeMarcus Cousins in a Blazers uniform? You tell me. Also, you'll hear next not only Terry Stotts talking about last night's loss to the Clippers, but Lane Kiffin sounding off. He's got a head coaching job. What he learned at Alabama might surprise you.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
I don't know if you're looking for a car, but if you are, begin that search at Gresham Ford. They're on Powell Boulevard as you come into Gresham and online at GreshamFord.com. But Bess and Preston and the team at Gresham Ford, they do a fantastic job. We bought two Ford Explorers from Gresham Ford. We could not be happier. And I tell everybody, you know, everybody's always talking to me about, hey, I'm going to be looking for a car. I'm like, go to Gresham Ford, because you'll end up with a story like we have. We're happy. We had a great transaction and you feel good about it. And that's all you want, right? You want a fair transaction. You want a great vehicle. That's Gresham Ford. I had the DirecTV folks over at the house this morning. And you know what? They've gotten really good. You know, I used to make an appointment and they'd give you like a window of 5 hours.
Yeah, I have to wait for 3 weeks. Yeah.
I don't know what like Com Crap is doing, or I don't know what the other places do. But when I made the appointment, the guy said, all right, he's coming out on Tuesday. He'll be there between 8 and noon. And I thought, oh, wait, I'm going to have to wait 4 hours. Then they said, no, don't worry about that. They'll give you a call that morning and they'll give you like a 30-minute window. Which is
much
so
better.
Helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about getting your day back, right?
Way better.
Because I'm on air here at noon.
Right.
And I thought, if this thing falls at 11 o'clock, I'm going to have to cancel. Well, I got a call this morning at like 7 that said, automated call. It said, hey, a guy will be there at 8.
Perfect.
Perfect. He shows up. Yeah, because I need the DirecTV. But, you know, we had some people over the house on, what was it, Friday?
Mm-hmm.
And I hate when people do this. One of the people that was at the house was jimmy-jacking around with the remote control, trying to watch that stupid MLS Cup soccer game that was on. Okay, leave it to a soccer person. So, by the way, the Seattle Sounders won the title without scoring a goal.
Yeah.
So if you win a championship without scoring, did you really win the championship?
That's allegedly. People seem to be going nuts up there.
Another question for another day.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just play sudden death in a championship game situation? Like, just keep playing. I don't care if they play for days. It'd be epic. But so somebody was trying to get the soccer game on and was using the wrong remote control and changing things around, whatever. We lost all HD channels over the weekend. I had no HD.
Which is the worst, because once you go to HD, you can't go back. Their faces are all distorted and the pixels are huge.
My eyes were going crazy. I thought I was losing my vision.
It's the worst.
I realized, no, it was just somebody jimmy-jacking around with your remote control. So I had the DirecTV guy in the house, and so he was working on another TV, and I said, hey, could you take a look at this one?
Mm-hmm.
And I told him what happened, and he was like, oh, that's the worst, you know, and then he starts fixing it. Then Anna asked him, she said, hey, by the way, she's like, I apologize if the house is so messy, which it really isn't. It's just that we've got a bunch of kids in the house. And so there's like these variations of Play-Doh on one table and toys.
Legos. Don't step on the Legos.
It's like a Toys R Us exploded in the living room. Just poof. So she says to the guy, you know, I'm sorry for that. And he goes, oh, no, I've seen it all, which begged a question. Like, what's the worst you've ever seen?
Oh, yeah.
So what I'm thinking is people who work in service industry jobs like that where you are installing and you're going into other people's houses. I know we have a ton of those people who listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to call in and tell me, like, what's the craziest, wildest, worst, best scene
awkward.
Ever?
Awkwardness. Yeah.
The guy told us that he goes into homes and he says that it's hoarders. And he says, and there's an organized hoarder who will stack their junk because they just don't want to throw anything away very neatly.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just chaotic hoarder who's got like mold growing, whatever. And I said, what do you do in that situation? Like where you go into a house and it's like, I can't be in here. I'm going to throw up or whatever.
Yeah.
And he says that the company's really good that they can just leave. And I go, but well, how do you leave?
Right.
Like how do you get out of that? And I go, what do you be like? Oh, I just don't have the equipment I need today. I'll be back.
Yeah.
And then you just leave.
And then you just never come back.
It's like being on a bad date. And you know, can I use the restroom? And you just run for the parking lot.
When I was a salesperson, I had a sales call and I couldn't find the address. I thought it was kind of strange. And I finally found it, went up, knocked on the door. The guy answered the door and he looked like he just got out of the shower.
Mm.
And he just had like normal sports shorts on and a t-shirt. And his hair was wet. And I thought it was an office, and it clearly was not an office.
He's going to his house.
Come on in. And I was like, he proceeded to sit down on the ottoman, and he started clipping his toenails.
Where you were talking to him?
And so I hightailed it out of there. I was like, I got to go. I said, you know, we'll have to reschedule this. But are you kidding me?
That's
it was
gross.
Disgusting. It was so gross.
All right. So for people who are in the kinds of industries where you do home visits like that, and you're out and you see people in their environment, I want to know what kind of zoo like activity that you have seen at 417-7575. What's the worst that you've seen? What's the best? What's the weirdest? Because the DirecTV guy today who did a great job, and I've been with DirecTV for 10 years, by the way. They should be advertising on this show. I've been with them for so long.
That's awesome.
10 years, they thanked me. They were like, thank you for being a 10-year person. And I said, what do I get for that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, did they knock anything off your bill?
No, I would like HD channels, please. Yeah. That's what I would like.
I would like to be able to see the television.
Yeah, 417-7575. I want you to tell me what you've seen. Make it like confessions of a service industry person. Whether you're a UPS driver and, you know, people answer the door in the nude, I don't know, pizza guy, or do you go into a house to install the cable and you find total chaos, but they want their TV? Like, I don't know.
I think the bravest people right now are people that are on planes. Stewardesses. I mean, the things that I've seen on planes, and I was looking at some pictures of some crazy stuff people do on planes yesterday. It was alarming. Kellen was peeking over my shoulder. We were dying laughing.
What do you mean crazy stuff? Like Mile High Club, or what are we talking about?
Well, there was a little bit of that, but they weren't in the bathroom. Just people, like, with their feet on the armrest poking through, you know, so you look down and someone's nasty toes are right there. I'm not a foot person, clearly.
No.
People flipping their hair so it's sticking back. A lady was in her underwear. Another guy had his shirt off. That's just too much.
All right, let's take some of these calls. I was going to do punch it, but we're going to go out to the phones. Don's on I-5. Don, what have you seen?
About 15 years ago, I did a ride along with a cable installer. The guy let us in. The technician started doing his work. The guy pointed to his coffee table and said, hey, you guys want something? And he had a pile of cocaine and like a bowl full of marijuana.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
You're like in a Scarface movie.
Yeah, and I just said, you know, I really don't partake before noon, but thanks anyway.
I love that. Emerson is in Vancouver. Emerson, what have you seen?
Well, the craziest thing I saw was definitely a hoarder house. I was picking up and delivering TVs, and the TV was right inside the front door in the living room. Couldn't go more than 5 feet because of the stacks of paper. It was stacked up about 4 feet high through the rest of the living room. Didn't think too much of it because I've been in a lot of hoarder houses. But just a small little TV there. And just as I got the thing picked up, the pile of papers moved. And I don't know what was underneath it, but there was definitely somebody who was living like on a couch or something like that, and hadn't probably moved in years, best I can tell. But saw some really crazy stuff doing that stuff.
Yeah. So when you went to a lot of different hoarder houses?
Yeah, yeah. Saw some interesting, like, just the way they would stack their papers up and nice piles and stuff. And you'd have to, like, kind of meander through the room to get to the TV or whatever.
It's interesting because that doesn't cut across, like, economic boundaries, does it? I mean, like, you would see people who hoard in affluent neighborhoods, people who hoard in non-affluent neighborhoods. Did you find any patterns or trends there?
Actually, you know what, John? It was usually lower income. I mean, yeah, you could be in a fairly, you know, decent neighborhood and see something like that, but it's usually the lower class places. I mean, I've seen, you know, kids running around where there's cigarette butts on the floor. You know, there's nothing in the room except for the TV and maybe a couch or something like that, or sleeping bag on the floor. I've seen some amazing adult themed collections in rooms. It's crazy what's out there, man.
I appreciate the phone callers, Emerson in Vancouver. Let's go to Brian, who's in Lake Oswego. Brian, what have you seen?
Hello.
Yeah, you're on.
Hey, John. I'm a 26 year real estate broker, and my first year in real estate, I called on a for sale by owner, walked in the front door of a big, great A-frame house with a great view on 2.5 acres. And after being greeted by a pit bull at the front door, guy let his dog out, started dodging birds, huge, you know, tropical type birds. I mean, some of them were 24 inches tall. And there were no less than 150 birds flying around the inside of this guy's house. And he sits down with me and we start talking to him about a listing contract. And he says, now, I said, why are you selling? And he said, well, my wife left me, which was no surprise to me. And got a little bit further into the conversation talking about the contract. And he says, now, if my wife comes back, I want to cancel the contract. And I thought, oh, brother, yeah, your wife is not coming back.
I love it. He's looking for a new birdcage. I love that. Gary is in West Lynn. Gary, what have you seen, man?
I've seen it all. I've been with the phone company for 20 years, and I've seen hoarders and all that stuff. But I guess the story we'll go with today is caught a young woman once at an early morning appointment, and she had all her ones stacked out on the table.
Oh.
Just telling me they're in 25 bundles because that's how the bank likes to turn them in to get her larger bills back. And then she's like, I got to leave for a few minutes. She's like, I know how much is there. Do not take any of it. She trusted me enough to just leave it all there. But it was just kind of one of the things that was a little bit different than the rest.
Gee, I just offer a glass of water. Can I get you something to drink? That's a customary thing, right?
That's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. 417-7575. Cable guy Chris is called in. Cable guy, what have you seen?
Oh, my God. What haven't I seen? I'll tell you the top three that stand out the most, though. The first is a grow operation before marijuana was legal many, many years ago out in Oregon City, where the guy was getting cable ran from his house to his garage, where him and his buddy could do their diligence with their grow operation, and the whole area was just potent. It was amazing seeing their operation as illegal as it was. Actually, as a sports coach and was, you know, this being a mandatory reporter, I actually went into a really horrible scene where I saw kids living in squalor that wasn't fit for anybody, had to call DHS on a household because it was just dirty diapers on the floor, garbage piled up, and they were trying to get cable installed. It was just the worst thing I've ever seen as a parent myself. I was disgusted. But and lastly is during when I was training a guy is some new college kids moved in up in the West Hills apartments area up there, and I'm coming back in to check on my trainee, and he's there making out with the customer. I was just like, are you kidding me? It was just unbelievable. And she was a very good-looking young lady.
That's my next question was going to be.
Yep, she was gorgeous. He was a good-looking guy. And I walk in, and I'm just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And, I kept that one to myself, didn't get him in trouble. I'm like, dude, more power to you.
I've seen a lot of movies, and that I usually expect that that's what's going to happen. That the cable guy's going to walk in, and it's going to be a good-looking lady. No?
Or the pizza guy who has the lady who drops the towel at the door, you know?
Yeah. I was a pizza guy once upon a time. That doesn't happen.
I order a lot of pizza, and I've never done that.
You've never done that?
No, I have not.
Trevor's in Clackamas. Trevor, what have you seen?
So I'm an electrician. I do agree hoarders are some of the worst, and I do feel bad for them. But
yeah,
one of the jobs I was on, you guys know what a single-wide trailer is like. You got to walk through the bathroom to go back to the back bedroom. I had to go back there to do some work. The customer came back and proceeded to use the bathroom.
No.
You know, number two, while I'm working right there. And they just have those little accordion doors that you pull shut.
No.
So, yeah, and then you got to walk back through it to get out to your truck. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, that's horrible.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
That reminds me of that scene in Seinfeld when Elaine is on a plane and she's waiting for the bathroom, and then this big guy comes out, and then so she starts to go in, and then she comes back out. She's like, I can't do it.
You know why? Because not only do you have to endure that, then Elaine's going to get blamed for it.
Right, exactly. The blame game is...
That was you. Brad's in Camas. Brad, what have you seen?
So this was a story that was given to me by a client. He is an insurance adjuster, and he was delivering a reimbursement check to a home, and the damage to the home prevented him from using the normal front door entry. So he knew that there was a side door entry, and to get to that side door entry, you had to walk past a large window that let you look in directly into the living room. And the home was occupied by two men who were clearly not expecting the visitor. And as he walked by the window, he saw them enjoying their relationship.
Oh, my. Well, probably drove him out of the business.
Yeah. That's never a fun thing if you walk in on people doing that.
If I'm that guy, I would have called first. 417-7575. Joe's in Portland. Joe, what have you seen? What's up?
I tried delivering appliances for 10 years. You go inside some people's houses, they're really dirty. I've seen somebody mop the floor with the toilet water right out of the bowl.
No!
Dryer out.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Or hoarder houses where they have to clear a big enough path for a refrigerator.
That's got to be... Aren't they embarrassed, though? Like, if you were a hoarder, wouldn't you know, like, hey, man, I got a delivery coming?
You would think so, but when you tell them you need a broom or maybe you should bring a shovel, they're like, oh, just put that stuff right back on top. I'll pull it out later and clean it.
Yeah. There's... I flip by those shows. Mm-hmm. I can't stay on them because I just feel like so claustrophobic, closed in, uncomfortable watching the hoarders.
Yes.
That... Yeah, I was watching a Cops episode, you know? The show?
Bad boy.
And the lady had called 911 because she wasn't feeling so good. And when they got in there, there was like six dead cats in there. There was a bunch of other stuff. And just not a healthy environment for somebody to be living in. Vern is in Portland. Vern, what have you seen?
Well, I repaired appliances for 12 or 14 years. I think the worst I ever seen was I went to repair a washing machine in a lady's basement, and she had five ferrets that lived down there.
Whoa.
And the washing machine had overflown. I opened the door and about knocked me down. I couldn't even get down the stairs. And I said, well, when you get it cleaned up, I'll come back.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I love it, Vern.
That's a great way to say I'm out of here.
I love it. It's not worth it.
No.
Dennis is in Portland. Dennis, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I have a small company that I own, and I do hard surface repair and restoration on tile and grout. And I had a lady that called me. Her parents were ill. Mother had cancer and the father was elderly. And they asked me if I'd come in and clean their tile floors. So I went in to clean them about 7 o'clock in the morning, met the lady there. The people had 26 cats, four of which we couldn't find. We had to find before I could clean the house.
Oh.
And two litter boxes.
Yeah, that's not a good scene.
Oh, I'm serious.
Not a great scene. Oh, bless you for the public service that you provide. Let's go to Robert in Portland. Robert, what do you got?
Hi, yeah, this is Robert. I wanted to tell you about, there's a couple of experiences I had when I was delivering pizzas a number of years back that, as a second job.
probably the one that sticks out most into my mind is I knocked on the door to deliver, and the lady opened, the girl that opened it up was in her DVDs. In fact, everybody in the house, there was two guys, two girls, were playing strip poker. So I walked in, I came right in the middle of that. So they paid for the pizza, gave me a $5 tip, invited me in to share the pizza. And I said, I got to get back to the shop. So
did you regret not playing? Were you not a good poker player?
Huh?
Were you not a good poker player?
No. No, they were, I can play poker, but that wasn't my kind of game.
I love it. All right, appreciate that.
You didn't have a lot of layers on.
All right, Dre in Portland. Dre, what do you got?
Jay, not a delivery man or a serviceman, but last week I'm at Fred Meyer's. I'm doing the shopping thing, man. See a young guy walking in. This is a true story. 82nd and Foster. See a young guy walking around with his hands in his pants the whole time, right? Nobody else is looking at the guy. I'm like, hey, is nobody going to, like, talk to this guy?
Yeah.
I get ready to leave. I'm in the parking lot pulling off. I have to look in my rear view. The guy is waving a gun around in the parking lot. You don't understand how many laws I broke getting out of that parking lot, man.
Oh, man.
Jay, it was the craziest thing. And all I had to get was a jump rope.
Yeah, and you were like, let me jump out of here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just had to check in with you.
No, I love that. You have to share that with somebody. Like, if that happens to you, you got to call your friend and be like, hey, you know what just happened? And how fast did I drive out of that scene? All right, if you want, tweet more at me, at John Canzano BFT. Up next, though, it's a big day tomorrow for Oregon State on the recruiting front. If you're an Oregon State football fan, you want to hear where they're going and what they'll announce. And if you're a Duck fan, Willie Taggart, starting to put together his recruiting classes. We heard from the real deal McNeil, Darian McNeil, yesterday on the show. Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian will tell us about what it is that Willie Taggart's selling and how much his staff and his assistant coaches will play a role in this recruiting process. This is a quick season for Willie Taggart and the Ducks. All that is next.
With John Canzano on 750 and 102.9 The Game.
Players already telling me that I'm a dog, their dog, programmed me dog to win, so they with it too. After this dead period, you can look and see a lot of commitments coming from Florida area.
That's the real deal McNeil, Darian McNeil, who Willie Taggart has convinced to come to Eugene. He's never seen the campus. He's never seen the locker room. He's not impressed with the Brazilian hardwoods, but he's coming to play for the Ducks. I like that about him. We're going to talk to Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian, who is the recruiting guru in the market. He knows Oregon State. He knows Oregon. We're going to talk to him not only about Willie Taggart, but we're going to talk to him about Gary Anderson's Oregon State program. Because Oregon State is young. Oregon State is not very talented. But Oregon State's got some momentum, and they have been growing up facing adversity. And Gary Anderson has got a big recruiting deadline looming, and he's coming on the show. I think he's coming on Wednesday. Is that right, Gliss? Gary Anderson coming Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, he's got to do Thursday.
He's coming on Thursday.
Thursday, yeah, he has to do Thursday.
Because Wednesday is the deadline, and he's going to be busy.
Yeah,
All right.
2 o'clock on Thursday.
All right, Gary Anderson will be on the show Thursday. All right, Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian here to talk about some recruiting. Let's start with Oregon State, Nemec. How big is this Wednesday signing period for them?
It's huge for them. They are looking at 4 or 5 possible new commits. The key targets are Craig Evans. He's the number 4 defensive tackle in the country. He's down to Kentucky and Oregon State. Oregon State right now has the inside track for him. It's an area of need. It'd be big. The other key need is an offensive tackle. And George Moore is 6'7", 305 pounds, committed to Washington State in name only. It's Washington State, Oregon State, and Cal. Again, I think the Beavers are in a really good spot. Those are the two big names to watch. They've got a number of commits, including Jake Luton, one of the top five JC quarterbacks in the country, who are already committed and expected to sign. They're looking at potentially as many as 7 or 8 signees, and they'd all be 3 stars or higher.
So for Oregon State, give us the difference between the February deadline and what's happening tomorrow.
Sure. What's happening tomorrow is the JC guys can sign early. They can get on campus early and be involved in spring ball. The high school guys that can sign tomorrow are signing a non-binding financial aid agreement. And the only high school guys who are able to sign are kids who plan to enroll at Oregon State or their respective university early. So it's not available to kids who plan on getting there in the summer. It's only available to kids who plan on getting there during this school year. So Oregon State expects to sign 4-star wide receiver Isaiah Hodgins and Taylor, the receiver from Chandler, Colby Taylor, who had offers from Notre Dame, Arizona State, Wisconsin, and others, 2 big-time talents who expect to be on campus early, but obviously those are non-binding, so there's still potential until they arrive on campus that they could sign potentially with 2 or 3 different schools. Kids have done that before, but they're locked in. They're going to Oregon State.
The Oregon State has the immediate needs, and Gary Anderson recognizes he's going to have to do things a little differently. He also, he's a community college guy himself, so I don't think there's a stigma for him bringing in JC players. How many guys could he bring in before people start to go, hey, man, what are you doing here? This is getting a little out of hand.
I think if he gets to the point where 75% of his class is JC guys, there's reason to be concerned. He's still got to get guys he can build up and will be there for 4 years and show progress and growth over 4 years. But it wouldn't shock me if this class is half junior college players, and I have no real problem with it. He's vetting them well. He's getting quality talent. And the big thing here is you look at the JC guys he's bringing in. They have 4, 5, 6, 7 Power 5 conference offers. He's competing with the SEC, the big Pac-12 schools, the big 12 schools for these JC guys. You look on the flip side right now in terms of high school recruits who don't prioritize immediate playing time quite as much, and he's fighting with some lower-level Power 5 conference teams. So the JC guys he's getting are really high quality, and a number of them, 4, 5, 6 of them, could and probably should start next fall.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian talking recruiting. On the Oregon front tomorrow, is Willie Taggart in play for community college kids yet?
Not hugely. Right now he's focused on the high school guys, to be completely honest with you.
So is there, and I know we talked yesterday to Darian McNeil out of Florida. He talked about, you know, a number of Florida kids that could be coming to Oregon. Is that a pipeline that you think is sustainable, wide open, and viable for Taggart right away?
I think it just depends on how we define pipeline. If you're talking about getting 2, 3, 4 guys a year from Florida, yes, Willie Taggart has that kind of charisma and that kind of pull out of the Sunshine State. If we're talking about the majority of his kids coming from Florida, I think that's a pipe dream. I think Florida State, Miami are going to do a very good job of locking that down. That said, if he can lock down California, do a better job with California, improve what he's done, improve what the previous staff had done at Oregon and in Hawaii, and all he's doing is bringing in a couple more Florida kids, it could lead to a bump in their recruiting. You look at a guy like Bruce Judson, a 4-star athlete, offers from Florida, Florida State, Clemson. He was committed to South Florida, South Florida's top commit. He says he's coming to visit Oregon, and he may flip. He's a 5'9", 190-pound slot receiver, and is just absolutely electric in the open field. You start putting Judson and McNeil together on a field, and it starts to get scary pretty quickly.
You talk about the Taggart approach. What are you seeing and hearing from recruits that's different from when Mark Helfrich was the coach?
Well, I think Mark Helfrich and his staff made 2 critical errors. They overvalued what an Oregon offer meant to most kids. They felt like a number of times, and I heard this from more than a dozen recruits, that Oregon would offer and then act like kind of that was the golden ticket. And it was like, hey, you know, you're going to come here because we offered. It's like, no, you still have to recruit me. And the other piece there is that Oregon, frankly, just didn't get new age with it. They didn't build hype and excitement on social media. And whether or not people think that's exciting, whether or not adults think it's cool, kids love it. And Oregon used to be that school that was cool, that had the Times Square billboards and the cool jerseys, and they were cutting edge. They stopped being cutting edge. They fell behind Alabama, Ohio State, Washington. Heck, Oregon State has a better social media recruiting following than Oregon right now. And I think Willie Taggart's going to tap into that. We saw when he went and visited Tua Tagovailoa, he tweeted, "Aloha." And everybody knew exactly, hey, he just confirmed it. He's in Hawaii. And you saw that story just absolutely take off. And that was something Helfrich was never really able to capture.
I love that you have to have the pronunciations on all the Hawaiian names. Is that part of the job?
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of the job, and it's not the fun part of the job. Sometimes they have to ask, and they have to say it really slowly four times, and I feel like an idiot. But I do the best I can, and I'm sure there's a kid like him. He doesn't do that great. He's got my name wrong. But for the most part, I try to get him right, and I have him pretty locked in.
When you look at the needs at Oregon right away, I start with defense, and I love the Darian McNeil. He came on yesterday. He's exciting. He's excited to have the Oregon commitment, but they need linebackers. They need defensive tackles. Are you seeing that kind of movement from them?
Well, they're certainly offering a number of them, and that's one of the things I like to see from Willie Taggart. Oregon kind of, under Helfrich, didn't offer blanket offer. They were very selective. And I think Taggart's approach is going to be to offer a number of guys, feel out the interest once that offer comes in, and then narrow the search with guys who say, wow, this Oregon offer is pretty exciting. Again, I thought Helfrich was really selective, and they offered once they felt comfortable, but then they didn't always have a good backup plan in place. The area I see Oregon upgrading quickly, rather than the front seven, and I know that's not exactly what Oregon fans want to hear, is the secondary. They're in the mix for four-star corner Thomas Graham. They've got a commit from Jalen Redd, who's the number four athlete in the country. D'Amador Lenore, the number three athlete in the country, decommitted, but has re-expressed significant interest in Oregon. And they do already have U.S. Army All-American defensive tackle Rutger Rettmeyer in the fold. I just finished talking to him right before you called, and he confirmed that he will be signing early with Oregon, plans to get on campus early. There was thought that he was looking elsewhere. He has offers from Ohio State and Michigan, but the U.S. Army All-American defensive tackle from Tennessee is locked in to going to Oregon.
Andrew Nemec of The Oregonian with us. I think part of Oregon's mistake, too, becomes they start thinking that they can recruit with Alabama, Ohio State, SEC, the top programs, Michigan, the top programs in the country. They got away from the bread-and-butter kid like Ryan Nall, who could just play football and was tough. Is that something Willie Taggart, does he make the same mistake that Oregon makes?
No, I think you're right, and I think Darian McNeil, and you did a great job of actually highlighting this, talking about we need dogs. We need guys who aren't afraid to hit, and that's kind of the message that Taggart's had, that McNeil has had, that we need dogs thing. And I think Oregon needs dogs. They need guys who aren't afraid to thump somebody. They need guys who are going to hit the hole, and yeah, maybe a guard pulls and it gets into that hole, but they're going to blow that guard up and let everybody else clean up. Oregon had too many players in the front seven that wanted to get around blocks instead of blowing them up. And I think Willie Taggart, you look at these offers that he's had, and you look at the highlight videos of some of these guys, and they're guys that run through people, not around them. And I think that's a huge key for Oregon going forward, particularly in the front seven. They need guys who don't want to get around blocks. They want to blow them up.
The Oregon State signing day tomorrow. How much will we be able to tell about the talent level for next season based on what happens for Oregon State tomorrow? I mean, is tomorrow like a pivot point for them, or is it just an indicator?
It's important. It's an indicator. I mean, Oregon State invited me down. I'll be there starting at 6:30 in the morning to get a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on. They certainly feel like it's important, particularly up front. They've got Justin Saddlemeyer already in the fold, a 6'7", 300-pound offensive tackle. If they get George Moore, they bookend their O-line now with 6'7", 300-pound guys. Again, I don't know that immediately turns your program around, but it sure looks different on the roster and getting off the bus. And I think what Gary Anderson wants to do is inject some size and some physicality into his team. And I think you're going to see that tomorrow. I think you're going to see them add five or six guys who stick to the message he's been delivering for the last year or two, but bolster that roster. So, no, I don't think tomorrow is a turning point in the program, but I absolutely feel Oregon State fans are going to go through the day, and if they get George Moore, if they get Craig Evans, they're going to feel a lot better because they might add three or four 300-pound guys to their offensive and defensive lines, and they're adding 6'6", 220-pound quarterback Jake Luton, who's a pro-style quarterback, very different from what Gary's recruited in the past. Some are wondering, and he hasn't talked about it quite yet, Some are wondering if maybe they shift gears a little bit offensively to a more pro-style look with Jake Luton. Again, not a scrambler. He's a pocket passer.
I'm looking at highlight tape right now of Isaiah Hodgins. How does Oregon State hold on to a receiver that goes 6'4 and can play this way? Why Nebraska and Oregon or others are running at him? What is it that Oregon State is selling this kid that he wants to be a Beaver?
There's a lot to be said for having a kid on the top of your board and telling him that from the beginning and staying with that approach. Oregon made a mistake. They waited on Isaiah a long time, and he expressed that he really wanted an Oregon offer. He released his top five. He put Oregon in his top five, and he didn't even have an offer yet. Oregon finally offered after he was committed to Washington State. He decommitted as soon as he got the Oregon offer, and then Oregon backed off and felt like they had other guys on their board they liked better. Meanwhile, Oregon State is still delivering the message, we want you. You are our guy. We will turn you into a star like Brandon Cooks, like the Rogers brothers, like so many other great athletes in their offense in the past. And Oregon kind of, you know, slow played him, and then they hit the gas again, and it was too late. Oregon State's consistent message with kids is they go after kids, they're honest with them. If they say you're third on our board, they tell them you're third on the board. But Isaiah was number one with a bullet, and they went after him, and they went and got him. Credit to Oregon State. Consistent messages work a lot to kids.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian. You can read him on Oregon Live and check him out tomorrow as he's behind the scenes. Now, behind the scenes, you just going to be hanging out live tweeting that, or what are you going to be doing, video?
We'll have to be a little bit careful due to NCAA compliance rules. You know, there's a lot that goes on that just you can't report on yet until the guys are all signed, sealed, and delivered. So I'll be doing my very best to toe the line and just kind of write about what it's like on a signing day for a coaching staff trying to secure pledges that they need, whether that's phone calls or waiting on a fax machine. I'll be there reporting what's going on.
All right. I appreciate your time, Nemec. Good job.
Thanks.
All right. There it is. You heard it. You're a Beaver fan. Are you excited about that? I think tomorrow is a pivot point if you're a Beaver fan, because I can tell in talking to Gary Anderson, he's in talk specifics with me on players, but I talked to him a couple of times when he was on the recruiting trail in the last few weeks. He feels really good about some of the players he's getting. He feels really good about the direction of the program. He felt like they ended the year with some enthusiasm and some confidence. And, you know, why you come to this show is because you want to know what's going to happen before it happens. And that's why we bring on Nemec to talk about that stuff. From the Willie Taggart front, I mean, he brought up the thing with the dogs again. Everybody's talking dogs. We need dogs. I think what everybody's saying is Mark Helfrich's players, the kinds of guys that he recruited, the way that they played, they were soft. And I go back to this. When Darian McNeil was on the show yesterday, here's a kid in Florida who is a slot receiver who plays with a lot of confidence. He's a three-star player. He's exactly the kind of kid that Oregon football was built on. The three-star kid who is solid, who wants to be a Duck. When Darian McNeil came on yesterday and he said that he had flipped from Arizona to Oregon because of Willie Taggart, I thought it was a tell that he had picked Eugene without seeing the campus. He doesn't know where he's going to live. He doesn't know where he's going to dress. He hasn't seen the locker room. He just wanted to be a Duck. To me, that is 99% Willie Taggart. And 1%, hey, Oregon's also in the Pac-12. I'm going to play at a Pac-12 school. Why don't I play for a guy that I'm super comfortable with? So if you're a Duck fan, tell me how excited you are about the recruiting period. If you're a Beaver fan, do that as well. We'll follow that tomorrow by being up to date and all over what happens on the recruiting trail. I promised you Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin's headed to Florida Atlantic from Alabama. We're going to play Lane Kiffin audio so you can hear his rationale and what he learned at Alabama. Did he learn anything? Plus, Terry Stotts and Damian Lillard kind of sounding off on what a whining group of players the L.A. Clippers are. You'll hear all of that coming up in Punch It Audio. I also need to tell you about First Call Heating and Cooling. Make them your first call for heating and cooling and air filtration. If you've got a home and you've got seasonal allergies, First Call Heating and Cooling can help you with a air filtration system just like the one we have in our home. Go to firstcallheat.com to find out all about it, or call them at 503-231-3311. That's 231-3311.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay, here we go. There we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
I'm all grossed out after all the service people. Is that what we call people who make calls to people's houses?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
If you were in that service industry, you called in the 1 o'clock hour to tell us about the most disgusting and weird things that you've seen. I was expecting more like people answering doors in bathrobes, and I got more dead cats.
Were you expecting or hoping?
Hoping.
Okay.
And so if you want to share, you can do so by tweeting at me, at John Canzano BFT. And again, my DirecTV technician this morning at my house was telling me that hoarding is the big thing. He said it cuts across socioeconomic boundaries. He says you go into nice neighborhoods and people hoard. You go into bad neighborhoods and people hoard. He says the difference is that one hoarder may have his stuff organized and the other doesn't. The other's got like ferrets and dead cats and litter boxes, and the other guy's got his stuff just nice and neatly stacked. I don't know which kind of hoarding is better. I think neither, and I'm getting creeped out thinking all about it. In the meantime, though, let's play some Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Well, Chris Hogan was in the pattern and Tom Brady was under center. And this was last night, Monday Night Football, Patriots, Ravens, Punch It.
First and 10, the snap, the fake handoff, drop back, winds up, long throw down the middle. Oh, he's got Hogan, over the shoulder catch, 40, foot race to the 30, down the middle of the 20, hash mark to the 10, they'll chase him into the end zone, touchdown New England. What a pass, 79 yards, that could be the dagger.
The dagger, Tom Brady talked it.
It was a big game for us. You know, he played home in December on Monday night against a great defense. It was important for us to come out and play well. We knew it was going to be a 60-minute game. You know, they're a tough defense. You know, like I said, I think there were some plays I wish we all would have had back. And but, you know, they're a competitive team. They forced you into some errors. And it was great to finish the game with the ball in our hands.
Yeah, Tom Brady all fired up after this game and loses his mind, by the way, when Julian Edelman ran a bad pass route.
Yeah, he quit on that route. He just went ballistic.
He did. They made up. They're old buddies, though, mm-hmm. and they're friends. But that, hey, it's show business, not show friends. This was a good win by the Patriots. They had a really bad sequence of about 2 minutes where they just gift-wrapped 14 points for the Ravens. They're still good enough to win. I'm hearing all this discussion about Brady. Should he be in the MVP conversation because he missed four games? Is it really right to have Brady in this conversation, because after all, you know, he hasn't been there all year. If you look at his statistics, you look at him 25 of 38 for 400 yards, 3 touchdowns last night. You look at him, you know, in this regular season, 22 touchdown passes and 2 interceptions. Yes, he's in the conversation. I don't care that he missed 4 games. He's the reason why the Patriots are where they are without Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, and I think the other stat that stood out to me was the graphic that they put up in the first half of the game. I believe it was his record just in December. At the time, I believe it was 51-10.
Yeah.
The closest was like Favre, and he was like 51 or 52 maybe, and 25.
It's ridiculous.
That's astounding.
Lamar Jackson won the Heisman Trophy. He was hanging out with Johnny Manziel afterwards. Not a good look. But Lamar got some advice from Johnny. Punch it.
Johnny Manziel, he was telling me a lot of positive things. You know, he came out of the room, too. And, you know, he was just telling me, man, have fun in college. You know, you only can stay there a certain amount of time. Just have fun with it.
I think that discussion went more like this. Don't let school get in the way of your education, Lamar Jackson. If I'm Lamar Jackson, this is a horrible move to associate yourself with Johnny Manziel. It's a bad marketing move if you want to play in the NFL. It's a bad personnel move. It's not something that he should do. I know that people who have been to Heisman Trophy ceremonies, and I have a Heisman vote, Lamar Jackson did make my ballot. I had him second on my ballot. I had Deshaun Watson first. I gave Jake Browning my my third place vote in the Heisman Trophy. You were looking over my shoulder.
I did when
I cast the vote.
I remember.
I always feel like I should vote for one Pac-12 player, the best player in the conference, and I voted for Jake Browning because I think he's the guy who would get the most votes. But Lamar Jackson wins the Heisman. Then he's photographed in his hotel room, like having a menage a Heisman, because they're sitting on the bed. It's Manziel, it's Jackson, and the Heisman Trophy. And I'm like, no, you don't want to be in that situation with Johnny Manziel hanging out and let people see that.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think a lot of that is Johnny Manziel just being kind of a Klingon and he's trying to resurrect himself. And so he's attaching himself to the hottest thing at the moment. And I, you know, Jackson's, I think he's just sitting there kind of going, okay, you know, how do you tell him no?
Yeah, he's a baby too. He's the youngest player ever to win it. And I just thought bad judgment all the way around.
Yeah, I think it's more Manziel just being a loser.
Eric Dickerson sounds off after Jeff Fisher is fired in Los Angeles. Here's Dickerson. Punch it.
Well, I just wanted to win. That's it. And I'm not hating on Jeff. I'm not mad at him. But, you know, I can't feel sorry for a guy who paid $35 million coaching. He'll be okay.
Yeah, he'll be okay. But Eric Dickerson, make no mistake, he ran for all those yards. Now he's dancing. He's dancing on Jeff Fisher's grave because Fisher wouldn't allow him on the sideline, didn't want him anywhere near it. Eric Dickerson is the happiest guy in Los Angeles. And ironically, I think that Dickerson played a role in this, in that it showed how petty and how off the, you know, Jeff Fisher had his eye off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with Dickerson. He's nitpicking whether he's welcome on the sideline while the team just sucked on the field.
Yeah.
And you forget your red flag.
I know that was, did you hear last night in the first quarter of the game, Belichick wanted to throw the challenge flag and he had it in his sock and he goes, he knows where his flag is. He said it twice. He goes, he knows exactly where his flag
is. Where I keep all my important
goods.
That was
hilarious.
I keep my money in my sock. Uh-huh. I keep, you know, whatever.
That was hilarious when he was looking for his flag. What an idiot.
Jerry Jones owns the Cowboys. He is not giving up on the possibility of Tony Romo coming back and leading the Cowboys in the playoffs. Give a listen.
Jerry, in your mind, what is a definitive situation that would call on Tony to come back in?
I don't have a definition for it, but you'll know it when you see it. It's kind of like a definition I heard one time of another issue, trying to define a negative topic, and they said, I don't know how to say it, but it's just something that when you see it, you know it's there. We'll see it.
This came on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas today. He's talking about the Supreme Court's 1964 ruling on pornography. And he's associating that he's associating that to Tony Romo.
Wow.
Get your mind out of the gutter,
that
Jerry.
Guy. Oof.
Jerry knows it when he sees it.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. That's kind of gross.
It's kind of really gross.
But here's the bottom line. Dak Prescott didn't look good Sunday night. This Cowboys team has only scored 24 points in the last two games. They're 11-2. Prescott's gone three straight games without passing for 200 yards. He had his first multi-interception game on Sunday. They're just two of their past 24 third down tries. Two for 24 on third downs. I think you have to start thinking about Romo, and you have to start thinking about the Patriots when Drew Bledsoe, you know, came in relief of Tom Brady, who was struggling as a young quarterback, and got them to a Super Bowl. And people forget that Drew Bledsoe played a role in helping the Patriots and Tom Brady get to the Super Bowl. And then Brady went into the Super Bowl and won the thing.
Right.
But people forget, without Drew Bledsoe, that Patriots team with a young Tom Brady doesn't get there. I think Tony Romo in relief is a big possibility here in the next couple weeks. Lane Kiffin. Fired. Disgraced. Resurrected in Alabama. On his way to Florida Atlantic now, what did he learn from Nick Saban at Alabama? Punch it.
That's hard to say. There's so many things. To be there 3 years with him, and he's very unique in the way he coaches the coaches and really helped me prepare to become a head coach again. I think the best way to describe it is the process. And so as opposed to one thing, there's so many things within that process of how the program is built, what he does on a daily basis, his commitment to the university, every second of every day as the CEO of the football team. But also not just locked into football. And I think that's one of the mistakes I made before, is just being so focused on offensive X's and O's versus the big picture of seeing everything and being the CEO of the program.
Lynn Kiffin's 41. He's the head coach at Florida Atlantic. This is his most recent coaching position. It should have been the kind of job he had first, not now. The problem is at age 32, the Oakland Raiders made him a head coach. Then he goes to Tennessee, bolts there for USC. Doesn't end well there for him. He has to go back to Alabama to kind of get his humility back. This is all backwards. If he had just, I think, started his career as the Florida Atlantic coach and built kind of a program and who he should be, he wouldn't have had to go and mature. I think it was a real disservice for him to go from tight end coach at USC, wide receiver coach at USC, offensive coordinator at USC, to the Raiders job at age 32. Players were older than him.
Yeah, that's crazy. It makes me wonder, what's this stink that's on him that this is his best option? Florida Atlantic? I mean, I don't know.
I think he knew he had to take a job. You know,
yeah, he knew, like, he wasn't coming
and
back.
And this was all that was available to him because he wasn't going to Oregon. He didn't get the South Florida job. And then you start looking around going, well, where can I go? Because he didn't want to go back and coach another year at Alabama.
I don't think he was going to come back. I don't think he was.
I don't think he was welcome.
No way. No, yeah. That's what I mean. The door was shut on that for sure.
Jay-Z took a shot at Phil Jackson's posse comment. For people who don't know, Phil Jackson took a shot at LeBron's posse. And Jay-Z fired back.
He's a dedicated family man who married his childhood sweetheart, Savannah, has three lovely children, the son who honors and worships his mother, Gloria, the friend who put his posse in position. I know. We know where we come from. We do understand where we come from, and the only difference between us and someone who has the MBA from Wharton or Sloan or Berkeley or Stanford is opportunity. LeBron James has provided his friends with that opportunity. And as we witness their development, and if we're looking up at the scoreboard, very few businessmen are better than Maverick Carter, Rich Paul, Randy Mims, and all the rest of the posse behind the scenes that make it look like they're just hanging out.
That's at the Sports Illustrated ceremony on Monday night. Jay-Z taking a shot at Phil Jackson, and basically, Phil called LeBron a posse and then referenced, or called him a diva, and referenced his business partners as the posse.
Shots fired, man.
I like Jay-Z.
I do, too.
He's like Kanye's sane other half.
Yes, he's like his likable brother.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If those two guys are talking and you have two rooms in your house, and then and Jay-Z's talking in one room and Kanye's in the other, there might be more people in the Kanye room just to see how crazy it gets, but... Jay, there's so much more substance coming from Jay-Z.
I think if you went to Kanye, you'd be scratching your head, and then you would go to Jay-Z to be consoled.
The Blazers, they lose last night, and Terry Stotts wasn't all that displeased. Punch it.
Probably our most competitive game of the year. I thought we really competed. You know, it was a tough loss, but I liked the way we competed throughout the game. We got down, we came back, didn't back down. It was a very good effort.
Yeah, good effort, except out of the gates, they gave up 38 points in the first quarter to the Clippers. It's not a good quarter. They were on their way to giving up about 160 in the game before they went, oh, yeah, let's go play. Clippers are a bad matchup for anybody, especially a bad matchup for a team that's lost three or four in a row and a team that isn't a very good defensive team. That said, I give the Blazers some credit. They hung in there late. They showed a little bit of fire. I need to see more of that, though, and I hate giving credit for things you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have fire. So why are we handing out badges? Oh, you played hard. You competed.
Well,
you're supposed to compete.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know.
Yeah, because they don't, because they're NBA players. It's true.
It's true.
You competed today. You got here.
That's right.
You fought traffic.
I'm fighting. I am fighting. I'm pointing at you. I'm getting fired up.
It would be like somebody, though, Kiki, saying, hey, you showed up today.
Yeah. Good job.
You're supposed to show up.
Yeah.
I know a guy who's such a blow it that... when he takes out the trash in his house, everybody kind of goes, oh, you took out the trash. Look at, hey, he took out the trash. And I've always looked at that and gone, well, he's meeting your expectations.
Right.
He's right there.
Yeah.
So I say raise the bar. Damian Lillard, meanwhile, he's complaining about the Clippers. I think this is interesting. This is a more valid point. He's complaining that they are whiners. Punch it.
I mean, the entire game, it was like, it was the referees, you know, the... it seemed like they were on the referees about every single play. So, I mean, I don't know, man. It is what it is.
I'll tell you what it is. It's professional athletics, and in particular the NBA, where every possession is somebody's bitching at the official while the ball's going the other way on the play. And I don't know if you can unwind the clock on this, because I think it's kind of where we are with this league. I would love the officials to just start like teeing guys up for dropping their arms and going, what?
Yeah.
You can't do that in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
You question the home plate umpire? Forget
yeah.
it.
Yeah, James Harden drives me crazy. I was at that game a couple weeks ago when Houston was in town, and I just can't even stand to watch that guy. He's always flapping around, yeah. and he's just, yeah, it's a bad look for the league.
It drives me crazy, because we all can play pickup basketball, and we can decide what's a foul and what's not a foul, mm-hmm. and hey, it's your ball, I got you, whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the NBA, it's every possession.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a possession that goes by that people don't right. turn to the official and start right. working on
it. It's getting to be like soccer.
It's bad.
You know what I mean?
Who's the worst? Who is the worst when it comes to your professional sports? 417-7575. Give me the one. If you hate James Harden.
Can't stand him.
Is there a team? Is it a team? Is it an individual player? Who is it? Who is it that drives you crazy as a sports fan when you're watching their games and you go, that guy's a whiner, or that team is this? You can weigh in on that. I also think I saw the Brazilian women's volleyball team.
Mm-hmm.
Good-looking ladies. They all look like models.
Yep.
Okay. But they are poor sports for as good as they are.
Really?
They're, you know, they're arguably the best in the world. They yeah. win the gold medal, or they're right in that gold medal game every
uh-huh.
Olympics.
Uh-huh.
But they are classless when it comes to arguing with the officials, showing up the other team, celebrating the other team's face. It's a lot of show. And some of that is cultural. But when they were in London for the Olympics, two Olympics ago, and they won the gold medal, what happens during the medal ceremony, and I've never forgot this, it taints who they are or what mm-hmm. they've accomplished. Japan and the United States went silver, Japan went bronze. So during the medal ceremony, the bronze medal winners get their medals, mm-hmm. then the silver, then the gold. Well, while the Olympic contingent was giving Japan their gold medals in the United States, the Brazilians were on the top of the podium dancing, mocking, making,
really?
Whistling, being really
distracting,
jumping on and off the podium, like celebrating their
like
moment.
12-year-olds.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I never forget my then 12-year-old
yeah.
who watched it was like, oh, they're being really poor sports. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, there's a way to be a bad winner. And that's it right mm-hmm. there.
Absolutely.
Kobe used to bother me because not so much what he did, but he got calls that I think other players didn't get. And maybe it frustrated me because it was against the Blazers a lot. And I thought, if they just called the game straight, it would yeah. be such a better game.
I think that's part of why I can't stand James Harden. He's always doing something to wrap the other guy's arm around, and then he'll pull him down.
Flopping.
Or, yeah, he's just a bad look. I don't like it.
I think, too, that they thought that they were fixing something. They were going, hey, we're going to penalize the floppers. The floppers are still flopping.
Mm-hmm.
They're just doing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see stiffer penalties. Should be ejected for flopping.
You should.
Right away, you're gone.
Guilty.
I just think the officials, if they stop listening to the players, I think, would stop bitching at them.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the officials, and like they give so much deference to a star player who begins to bitch at them as the ball's going up the court. You see the conversation going on. If you're at the arena or you're watching on TV, you can see the official and the player kind of barking at each other. In Major League Baseball, if the home plate umpire, if you look at him wrong...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen a home plate umpire, nothing said. The batter will turn and look,
right.
or the pitcher will stare, like glare. Umpire takes his mask off, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you looking at? Pitch, throw a strike. You know, I think we need more of that from the officials in the NBA. I'm just saying.
I'm for it.
Gliss, do you have a guy that drives you crazy? You watch some sports. Is there a guy that's complaining? The other thing is on the defense and offensive players on a pass play. Either if they catch the ball, the guy's automatically, you know, it's first down, big celebration.
Oh,
if they got
yeah.
a first down.
Yeah.
If the ball's incomplete, no matter what the DB did, if he had any role in this play, he jumps up with the incomplete sign.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
the other thing that drives
exactly.
me nuts.
I would probably say James Harden as well. I've never liked him. I will say, though, I was at the Houston game, and I happened to see the Rockets before they ran out of the tunnel, and I kind of liked him a little more when I saw him up close and personal, because he seemed like he was a little more easygoing than I thought he would be.
What'd you see specifically?
He was just kind of dancing around, rallying the guys around, kind of getting everybody pumped up. He was doing a little dance and kind of starting to sing along before the guys ran out onto the court. So I just he looked a little more easygoing than I thought he would. With that said, though, I do have a hard time watching him play because I think, you know, he either is shooting three-pointers or he's trying to draw a foul. This year, I will say, though, I think he's been more entertaining just because he's actually distributing the ball as well.
Get him on the show.
Like to hear you say that to his face. The beard.
I'd say it to him.
I think he'd be a guy that Portland... He's the kind of guy that you'd love him if he's your guy because he scores. He's good.
Yeah, he does. He just always is getting...
Yeah.
He's always getting to the free throw.
But if he was on your team, you'd love him.
I don't know. That'd be tough.
You would grow a beard. You'd be like, I need to grow a beard because I love James Harden. You tell me you wouldn't go to a game and have a fake beard on.
Absolutely not. Under no circumstance.
I call nonsense on that.
Under no circumstance would I do such a despicable thing. No way.
We'll see about
no
that.
No way. I feel sorry for Kyle Wilcher. He has to play with him.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, if he's your guy, you love him. Mm-hmm. All right, leave it here. Kiki's going to read the news, and she's next.
The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 and 102.9 The Game.
OmniGuard Security, that's my security company. It's who we use at our house. You go to OmniGuardSecurity.com to find out all about security for the modern world. It's a great company. And I have used other security companies, and let me tell you, it's the illusion of security if... It's not really secure. That's obvious. So don't settle for the illusion of security when you can have modern security, monitored alarms, video, wireless, all of that, mobile apps. Get a quote or call them today by calling at 503-970-7147. That's 970-7147. Or go online at OmniGuardSecurity.com. They've also got a wellness program, a senior living program as well on their website. You can check that out. And, you know, basically they put sensors throughout the resident's apartment. They can track the activities of a loved one if that person is older. I had a grandfather who was in his 90s. He wanted to live alone. He wanted that independence. I would have loved to have OmniGuard, the ability for them to monitor him. I remember one time he fell down in the hallway. He spent the whole night crawling down the hallway in his 90s. You know, and he got there. He's determined. He was tough, but he didn't have to be. OmniGuardSecurity.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth.
So my first story is a great soccer story, but first I need to clarify how I pronounce the name. It's on his Twitter page. It's Leo Messi.
Okay.
I've heard it as Lionel or Lionel. So I need a little help here, John. How do you pronounce this?
My soccer geek friends will call him Lionel Messi.
Lionel.
My nephew, who's a huge soccer player and soccer guy, like so big that when I brought him to Powell's Books from California, I took him to Powell's Books. I said, you can pick any book out at Powell's. He got a Messi book. And I said, what'd you get? Messi. That's what he called him.
Messi.
You're the update guy, Kellen. What's his name?
I go with Messi.
Messi?
I'm going to defer to the pro here. How old is your nephew?
He's 10.
Yeah.
No, pro. He's 11.
But is it Lionel or Lionel? His own Twitter refers to him as Leo.
In FIFA, I always go by Lionel Messi.
I hear Lionel. But
Lionel?
Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to play highlight clips, and we're going to let the broadcasters in Argentina tell us.
It's Messi. Has the little wizard got one final trick? Oh my goodness, he has! The magician waves the magic wand, and Messi is magnificent and breaks the heart of the Iranians. Inside stoppage time, nothing was on. He took one touch. He moved 5 yards forward on his left foot from the right side. He curls it home. It had to be him. 22-22 for Argentina. Team Messi 1. Team Meli 0.
No resolution there.
I don't know if that's helping.
Do you think we're clear on the last name, though?
Let's go to another interpretation.
Messi will put it to the right side and get the return pass. Now it's out of the box. He looks motivated now. Takes the shot at the post and in. He's got one there. Lionel Messi, 2-0 Argentina.
Lionel.
He is pumped now.
I got Lionel there.
Lionel. Okay. Right. Okay.
Want to do another one?
I think I'm good.
I'm not.
I'm just going to call him Messi. Okay, you keep going.
Otra vez, Messi de zurda. Es un secreto que el pie le cuenta a la pelota. Y aquí le murmuró mil cosas la zurda de Messi al balón. Golazo. Gana la Argentina 2-1 a Nigeria.
Pretty clear there.
Okay. Okay. Well, the story has to do with Messi. Okay. I'm going with that. I'm going with that. Just about a year ago, a five-year-old boy from an Afghan boy, he was five, made a makeshift jersey, Messi jersey, out of a plastic bag.
Mm-hmm.
Their plastic bags are blue and white, so he put a tin on it. He was photographed. It was shared millions of times online. Today, this little boy actually got to meet Messi. Messi invited him. He had a friendly, invited him out. He walked the ball out, put the ball on the pitch. There's some great photos that Messi tweeted out that I retweeted, but I just thought it was a really nice story. And it was a story almost a year in the making. So I just wanted to share that today. I thought it was pretty
neat. That's a cool story.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty neat.
That's a good ending.
You like that?
Yep.
So all that buildup. I'm still sticking with Messi, though.
I don't know. Let me go back to another interpretation.
Lead pass now. Into the box it comes. Di Maria, quick shot off the post. It doesn't go in. Unlucky. And then it's hit upstairs by Messi. Argentina has a 1-0 lead. First goal that Nigeria has conceded. They look lost on defense.
Boom. Pretty clear there.
Yeah. You know what, though? People that have one name.
Yeah.
One name is pretty good. Kellen.
You're my boy, Blue.
Can I go to more of these?
Yeah.
This might be the determining factor.
Enyema at the ready. He knows what's coming. Messi! Enyema couldn't stop it. Marvelous from Messi. Cometh the hour. Cometh this little genius.
Don't know anything he was saying.
No. But I like
you're my
mine,
boy,
Kellen.
Blue!
What else
you're
you got?
Boy.
What do you got? What do you got?
All right. Closer to home, a Memphis woman had a rough trip to the grocery store. The Tennessee mom was at the register with her checkout, and she was using several coupons. One of the customers behind her became agitated. Obviously, he's a pretty busy guy. So he starts starts yelling at her. He gets a little crazy. He ended up getting a little physical with her, pushed her down, that kind of thing, over coupons. So I bring this up. I was at the grocery store the other day, kind of the opposite situation. It was an elderly woman who was actually using her checkbook, which... You know, a lot
you
of people
don't see a lot of that.
You don't
anymore.
See that a lot. And I could tell there was quite a few people behind me. I was totally fine. You know who was getting agitated and I really wanted to say something to him was the checker. You could tell he was like, you know, and she was taking her time. The people behind me were pretty cool. We were kind of looking at each other, we're smiling, you know, because to me that's like you think you're your grandma or your aunt or whatever the case may be.
Wide berth for that lady.
Exactly. So I guess what I'm saying is it's holidays, people are getting cranky. Just calm down and be patient.
But here's what bugged me. I was in the Safeway near my house the other day, and there was only one check stand open, and I had quite a few items.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this lady who's a checker who's notoriously slow, and she was the checker.
Mm.
So I'm in this line. I got a lot of stuff, and I'm like fourth in line. I know this is going to be like a half an hour. And the thing that got me was... I get it. She's bored. She's at work. She's checking. She's bored.
She's got nothing but time.
Nothing but time. And she's having a conversation between transactions with whoever's ending their transaction and they're getting their thing. She's stopping. She's got the receipt in her hand because she's figured out as long as she holds the damn receipt, they can't leave.
Right.
So she holds the receipt and then holds them hostage there for about 30 to 60 seconds each as she... Just makes another point she has. It's like, I've got the conch. I'm in control here.
You know what that is?
What is that?
That's a chatty checker. Hashtag chatty checker. Seen it 100 times.
You know what I did? I looked at the people behind me in line who were also noticing
eye rolls.
This.
Eye rolls.
And we all kind of went, oof.
That's anyway. When you just kind of want to look down. You just want to do your pen and get out of there. Don't engage.
I just want my transaction, and I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad for saying that, but I don't need any conversation. I just acknowledge you. You acknowledge me, and let's go.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
But that's the point.
That's what you got. Okay, one more story I've got. Yeah. There's a 10-year-old boy who lives on the East Coast. He's a huge Tom Brady fan. Unfortunately, he has a very rare brain cancer.
Okay.
So he's had 6 brain surgeries. And his last brain surgery, the surgeon came in to talk to him before, and the little boy asked him, he's a huge Tom Brady fan,
mm-hmm.
asked him if he could carve a 12 into his skull.
Okay.
Because he's a huge Tom Brady fan. The surgeon was obviously a little taken back, but he discussed it with the parents and said, you know, I don't think that there's actually any sort of risk to this. So anyway, so he did. The little boy got really happy. He saw the 12 on his x-ray. But Tom Rinaldi did a great story. I tweeted that out. It's a great story. If you get an opportunity to take a look at that, you know, the holidays are here. You know, we're really busy with getting presents for people, and I think sometimes we take our eye off the ball what's really important. If you watch this story, I think that's gonna get your priorities straight.
All
so
right.
Anyway, I wanted to give a shout out to
we'll
that.
We'll get people more engaged.
Yes. And one more thing. With the end of the year just around the corner, there's an easy way to give to the Baldface Truth Foundation, which helps local kids in arts, music, education, and sports. John showed me how to do this during the break, and I thought it was important that we shared with the rest of you. There's a way that you can help while you're doing something that many of us are already doing. So, John, what can people do to help kids with the BFT?
Well, you can go. Amazon has a cool way to give. It's the Amazon Smile program. And if you go to smile.amazon.com, it's part of your normal transaction. Instead of just going to amazon.com, go to smile.amazon.com. You can select organizations that you want Amazon to help out with. And Amazon will give a portion of whatever you spend to a charity of your choice. And you can select the Baldface Truth Foundation among the charities. And they've given away $37 million this as of November of 2016. And you can pick based on location, Portland, Oregon, Baldface Truth Foundation. Just if you're going to shop this holiday season on Amazon, go to smile.amazon.com. And as of today, like I can see in the year that we just use Amazon in the course of our normal year, we've generated $56 for the BFT Foundation just through things that we've bought. We're not paying any more for it. Amazon's just giving a portion of the proceeds to the BFT Foundation. So if you're going to use Amazon, go to smile.amazon.com or check out the Amazon Smile program and select the Baldface Truth Foundation as your charity, and there you go. You can make an impact.
Perfect. Love it. I already did it.
All right.
I'm ready to go. Now I just need to buy some stuff.
Well, by the way, yes, buy stuff, and you should help out. It'll help out community. So what are you going to buy? What are you going to buy on Amazon? Some pet-related thing?
I was encouraging you to get the Furbo. Talked about this.
We'll see about that. My dogs have a good life.
Yeah.
They have a better life than I do. All right.
You can spy on them.
I need something that's going to spit me a treat.
Kellen's spying on his dogs, though, aren't you, Kellen?
It's true. Yeah. I've got the Skype camera all set up to auto answer, checking on little Bogey, my dachshund.
See, it's very reassuring for pet owners.
I think it's anxiety, though, because then you see how bored your dog is and you think about, oh, I'm not stimulating this animal. And you feel
Wrigley's,
bad.
No, Wrigley's just sleeping. She doesn't care. She just sleeps.
What you need is something that'll wake up your animal so they'll sleep more like at appropriate sleeping hours. They're sleeping all day.
The Furbo has 2-way audio.
Yeah.
So, and I get little text messages when they're barking so I can hit the microphone, tell them to pipe down.
I wonder if the animal thinks that this is a good idea because, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, it could be probably a little bit alarming. A little bit alarming.
Do you think? Because if I'm the animal, I'm trying to get some sleep during the day because I know I need my A game when you're home. And all I'm doing is getting interrupted.
I don't know.
Man,
that's tough.
Who keeps waking me up with this damn treats that comes spitting out of this machine?
It's
and
great.
Voices I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Anybody ask the dog if this is a good idea?
Yeah, I don't know. I do need some advice, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to bring this up earlier. So last week, you know, my fence blew over when we had that windstorm.
Yeah.
And It's the fence that divides the neighbor and I who, how can I say this politely? We don't communicate a lot.
Okay.
We're not friendly, if you know what I mean. So it's still, I've got three sections of fence that are still sitting in her yard because it's fallen over. Basically what happened is I have two posts that were rotten and it's still in chunks. So I think essentially all I really need is two new posts and then I can salvage the rest of the fence.
Yeah.
But she hasn't said anything. I haven't said anything because I think we're basically kind of having a staring match about who's going to fix the fence. But I think technically we share the cost in that, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be a good neighbor thing.
Right. Well, but she's a bad neighbor. So does the good neighbor thing actually apply to a bad neighbor?
Once upon a time, I put in a fence and I just told the neighbor I'm going to pay for the damn thing. And because then I had control over what kind of materials, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, when it was done, all that stuff. But I kind of think that that's something that you share.
I do too. So
yeah,
this summer we had a limb that was on both of our properties that was another neighbor's tree. And I discussed it with her. I said, hey, is it okay if we take this off? She says, yes, I want it done too. I said, great. Let's go ahead and chop this down. I had a friend do it. Didn't charge me very much. So all I asked her for was $30. And she had agreed to that before we did anything. She agreed to pay me $30. So a couple days later, it's done. Everything's cleaned up. And I said, hey, you know, how about my $30? She told me to pound sand. She basically said, I'm not paying you. I'm going to have a fixed income. So this is the type of neighbor that I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And I know it bothers her that the fence is down because I see her in the morning looking over there.
Which side is that on you? The back?
Behind. Yeah.
Oh, she's got a nice swimming pool back there. Why don't you jump in that pool?
No, I was tempted
to she puts that fence right back up.
I was tempted to, when I was throwing the ball for Wrigley before I came in today, I was tempted to throw it into her part of the yard, you know?
You know what you need? You just need to invite Kellen over for a barbecue. That lady will come over and offer to put the fence up right away.
All right.
I like how Kellen just took that.
Right?
He's what?
No, I just don't like.
Hey, you tell me if you're. Is that a good neighbor thing, Gliss? You've got neighbors. Do you share the cost of the fence? What's the deal?
I kind of think you have to. I mean,
what if she doesn't have any pets? The other neighbor, she doesn't have no pets.
She does have a pet.
What does she have?
She has a little Yorkie.
Does it stay
outside?
You know
what she uses? You know what she uses on this Yorkie?
Shock collar.
No, it's worse. You know those little air horns? If the dog starts to come close to our fence, which is now broken, she uses the air horn because she doesn't want the dog to get next to the fence because then
is it more
my
like,
dogs and her dogs start barking.
Is it like this?
No. That's like a Kong.
That's like a battle.
Yeah, no. Horn. It's the kind that like stops your heart.
Is it like this? No?
No, it's just bah.
How about, is it this way? No?
No.
That better?
Much closer, but very brief.
I've got one. Is it like this?
No? Is that part of it? You have fun here, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I just, good neighbor, bad neighbor, I don't know what the rules are. I don't really want to talk to her, but right now we're just playing chicken with the fence, and I don't know who's going to win.
That one?
Yeah.
Is that closer? Which one's closer?
The cruise ship, I think, was closer.
That?
Yeah, but it's just a quick, just scares the dog to death.
Who knew there were so many horns?
You know? I don't know.
All right. So we have a couple things going on here that are important here. Number one, first and foremost, next on the game, Afternoons with Fletch and Chop coming up. If you want a podcast of this show, you can go to iCloud. You can go to SoundCloud and iTunes. Sorry. SoundCloud and iTunes to subscribe so you get it right at your mobile device every day. You can also go on to 750thegame.com where they have great stories, great content, including a story that was posted last night. Would you believe that one of the trustees at the University of Oregon was trying once upon a time to get the Oregon Ducks dance team to stop dancing at games? That's a dance team. That's like asking the football players to stop playing football.
Yeah, that's like ordering a cheeseburger and saying, hold the cheese.
It's on the 750 The Game website. You can read all about it. You can see all the photographs in there and figure out what it's about. The bottom line is tomorrow's show is going to be big with recruiting. And Gary Anderson will be on the show on Thursday. And we got a lot to talk about. But leave it here. Fletch and Chop, they're next.